Welcome to another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, The Cusp Show. I'm Joe Favorito, along with, once again, my co-host, Tom Richardson.
Hello, Joe. How are you? I know you're just back from LA and the Sports Business Journal Sports Media and Technology Conference.
The New Lion.
The New Lion. Sorry, we've got to get the sponsor name
right.
In there. And I know you took the red eye this morning.
Yep.
So I'm glad you have the energy to do this, but why don't we just start with a quick review of the conference.
Yeah, it was first week of October at the beautiful Manhattan Beach Marriott, far, far away from Citi Field as the Mets ended their season on the same night.
A sad night in New York sports.
It was a sad night. And I stayed for the first day. I actually went out there early. Tuesday, I made kind of the trip through Hollywood to see some of my friends, including I went on the Paramount set to see my buddy Dan Loria, who's in the series Pitch, and got to watch how they put it all together and met Mark Consuelos and talked to the showrunner about what they're doing from a brand standpoint, how they're integrating brands into the series.
And the premise of that?
So it is the first female pitcher to play in the major leagues. It debuted in September. It's on Thursday nights on Fox. Fox and MLB have put a lot of time and effort into it. It's been very, 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 very well received. It is not really a baseball show as much as it's a story of this young woman and what she kind of goes through and the other characters. Really great. Mark Consuelos plays an agent. Allie Larder plays her publicist. Bob Balaban plays the owner of the team. And then Dan Loria is the coach of the team. And it's really interesting. They were taping episode 7, which I don't want to do a little spoiler as to what goes on. But every hour episode, there is kind of a plot turner in it. It's really well done, well written. I watched the second episode, and there was not a lot of baseball in the second episode, and the characters held your interest. So that was a lot of fun to go on the Fox lot. It's right next, and I met Dan when we did Lombardi. He played Vince Lombardi, and another character in that was a guy named Chris Sullivan, who's been in The Nick and a bunch of other series, was on Chicago. And he is on the adjacent lot for This Is Us, which is the unbelievably popular show that is on NBC. And it's funny that they are two Lombardi alumni are actually in shows on the same, with the back-to-back sound stages. So that was a lot of fun.
So after hobnobbing with the celebs on the Hollywood lot, you decided to go to the sports conference
So I took a step
mundane
down.
Mundane experience.
Right. And it was good. I mean, I think the biggest highlights were, frankly, the guys who don't give a crap and have the money to do and really say what they want to say. So Steve Ballmer opened it up and talked about innovation and what he's doing with the Clippers and obviously what they want to do in their streaming and their deal with Fox. And then kind of let the whole room know that, yeah, we're not going to play in the Staples Center. We're going to go and build our own arena and control our own inventory. And he went on and on probably for about 25 or 30 minutes with John Arand. And it was tremendous.
It was a one-on-one interview.
One-on-one, yeah. To start it off. Then there were some panels on, you know, on kind of the typical stuff, talking about every panel, which is another bugaboo for you, talked about ratings and why the NFL ratings down. And actually, I did a little straw poll afterwards at night when we were sitting around the bar. And the one question that everybody said, 5 years from now, people won't even ask that question because it won't be relevant because people will have a different way to measure things.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't come up at all about having like a hook it or an MVP index involved to talk about, hey, we can measure social against this and everything else.
Right.
And, it, you know, everybody was still talking about, oh, the ratings are down for the NFL. And
did they have any measurement people there from ComScore?
No, not really. No, it was just kind of generic talk about it. And then the morning ended with Steve Bornstein getting up, talking about, you know, being a pioneer going from ESPN to NFL Network and now with Blizzard Activision. And he had an amazing line, again, just kind of letting everything fly as I think Steve normally does because he's at a certain age and doesn't really care and has his own opinion and voices it. And he, again, John Arand was running through the various properties as to good and bad or indifferent Twitter. What do you think about this? And he said, well, what do you think about YouTube? And Steve Bornstein said, it is not a property I would trust, nor would I would give them anything. They don't know what they're doing. They don't take care of anybody. All they do is take people's money and take advantage of people. They are horrible people, and I would never let anybody put anything on YouTube. And everybody kind of like gasped in the room. And then later in the day, Brian Rolette from NFL property, NFL Media was there, and they asked him about it, and he had a great line. He turned around and he said, You know, I heard Steve say that. My guess is that what Steve is really meaning is YouTube hasn't offered me any money yet, so that's why I say it's a terrible property.
Right.
So, but it was good. I mean, you know,
And I bet that word got back to Mountain View, and they changed the algorithm to disadvantage Activision Blizzard and search returns immediately after.
Yeah. But it was good. I mean, you know, you get to see a lot of people. Intel did a great presentation on kind of how they're trying to engage fans and help engage fans and work with partners. That they have in the space. There was a panel on, you know, how you make money and where the VC money is going. A lot of it was about esports. A lot of it was about kind of, you know, the new age stuff and how, you know, the current properties have to change. So it was a good day. I did not stay for the second day. I came back, which is why I'm back here to teach my class and do this lovely podcast with our guest.
Yes, so let's get into the show. You can introduce Mr. Neuberger.
Yes, so we've had Joe Quinlan on, Associate Athletic Director, when we really first started out to talk about college athletics. And we figured now as we get into the second year and things are kind of ramping up, especially with college football and basketball on the horizon and so many other things coming off the Olympics, we wanted to talk to somebody else. So we decided to bring in Barry Neuberger, Associate Athletic Director for Corporate Sponsorships, and also another professor in our program. Barry, thanks for coming aboard.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
One of the things we like to ask everybody, and you've had kind of a unique experience in college athletics from an entrepreneurship standpoint. It's not like, you know, you went to Michigan or Notre Dame and said, oh, I'm coming into an established brand, you know, and I'm going to go and sell sponsorships and create programs. You actually said of your 10 stops, 7 of them were startups or first-time opportunities to try and get involved in the selling of college athletics. So why don't you kind of run us through how you got into this position and eventually ended up at Columbia.
Well, Joe and Tom, again, thanks for having me. It's been a great ride. I've been in the business for over 30 years, and at every stop along the way, it's been about revenue generation. And I just remember my days as being a sports information director at my alma mater, Pace University. And I loved being a part of college athletics, but I thought there would be more to it. And I realized that once you can generate revenue, there was always going to be a place for you. So I got into the marketing side of things at my second stop, which was NYU. I was involved in fundraising and sold our first ever corporate sponsorship to the friends at Coca-Cola. So we had the Coca-Cola NYU Holiday Basketball tournament, and I thought, you know, this is...
So it was NYU Athletics, to be clear.
Yes, NYU Athletics. And we were playing Division III basketball in the heart of Greenwich Village, right here in New York City. But we had a pretty good team, and I was able to put together some marketing programs where pretty soon we were selling out a 2,500-seat gym for Division III basketball. And it looked great on TV. We had a television contract with Madison Square Garden Network at the time. And people took notice of the fact that we were putting together some very successful programs.
And it was also a startup because didn't you get there right when NYU was bringing college athletics back after 20 years of not having anything, correct?
Actually, I came the second year because I did interview for the sports information director's position. I knew they were coming back at Division III with varsity basketball. And Bob Goldshall, good friend of ours, ended up getting the job over me. But the administrators in the athletics department said to me, you came in second, but we're going to try and find a place for you here because we believe that you can really help us. Okay. And a year later, it was Mike Muzio who said, Barry, we have the job for you. And we want you to fill the gym. We want you to raise money. And I said, Mike, this is great. I'd love to do it. So it was a wonderful 8 years at NYU, and it really gave me my first solid footing in college athletics. But then I realized I needed to get to Division I, where the real action was.
Before you go there, I have to quickly ask Joe, do you know the nickname for the NYU athletics program?
One of the most
intimidating names in all of college sports.
And it was always been the Violets. And, you know, you talk about Cal Ramsey, Ralph Branca.
Did you have any notable athletes while you were there?
Well, we had Terry Tarpey was our best basketball player while I was there, and Terry's son just graduated from William & Mary, was an outstanding player and is now playing overseas.
Okay.
So we had some really, really successful teams.
Played in the Garden? Didn't you play a couple games in the Garden?
We played
Columbia in the Garden.
We played CCNY in the Garden. We had a great level of student athlete who came to NYU to play basketball and also earn a meaningful degree. Kind of that I've come full circle now that I'm at Columbia.
So I'm going to go back to Tom. So do you know what Pace's nickname is, by the way?
I have no idea.
The Setters.
Yes. That's the first word that came to my mind, word association.
So I have
The Violets and the Setters.
I went from NYU to Georgia State and got my first taste of Division I athletics.
So do you know the Georgia State nickname, Tom?
I do.
I think I do. Is it the Cougars?
No, it's the
you're
blue.
You're close. You're in the family. Oh. You're in the cat family, though. It's the Panthers.
Panthers. Okay,
right.
Okay. I blew it.
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. And we started to do some good things there. And then I got a call from a headhunter who said that DePaul University in Chicago was looking for somebody to come in and raise money to be director of development for athletics.
Wait, but you moved from the heart of Manhattan to wherever Georgia State is?
Downtown Atlanta. Yes. Okay, so I'm kind of an urban guy, Tom, so I try to keep my roots in urban settings. So when DePaul called, I thought this is the kind of place that I'd always wanted to be at, you know, where basketball was king. And a great city like Chicago.
Joey Meyer was the coach then?
Joey Meyer was the coach. Bill Bradshaw was the athletics director. Yep. So I was brought in there to raise money for a specific project, the Ray Meyer Recreation Center. The job just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. The lead donor got impatient with DePaul's procrastination in getting the project off the ground, even though they hired me as a sign to him that they were ready to move forward. He said it was too late. And he pulled his pledge off the table, gave the money to another school out west called Stanford University, which left DePaul in an uncomfortable position with me. They didn't really need a marketing guy for athletics. They had a former DePaul softball player who was doing that, and there really was no job for me at that time. So we parted ways mutually, and I took on a project at the Institute for International Sport in Rhode Island and did fundraising, corporate relations for the World Scholar Athlete Games for 1 year. Knew it was only going to be for 1 year, but my wife was an angel throughout this whole thing, and we looked at it as an adventure. Without any kids, you can do that. Mm-hmm. And we moved to Rhode Island for 15 months, lived in a little apartment near the beach, had a great experience with the World Scholar Athlete Games, and turned that into a startup position as Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan was moving into Division I with a brand new arena being constructed, and they needed somebody to get to do everything. So I did fundraising, I did the annual fund for athletics, I did the corporate sponsorships, I did the premium seating for Oakland University as they were ready to make their move into D1, and what a great experience. We opened our arena with Michigan State coming in, the only time they've ever come to Oakland to play, and you talk about funny stories. I remember walking through the arena at about 3 o'clock that night of the first game, and there were empty spaces that we had sold as seats. Oops. That somehow the chairs never made it to the location. So we had to scramble and get some folding chairs and put the seat location on a little sign on the chair so people who had bought those seats knew where they were going to be sitting. And had a great time at Oakland. We helped get them on the map. You know, we sold, in those days, we called them floor suites, where we had people sitting at a table for four with their corporate sign on the front. And when they came to the game, they got a meal right at their seat, and they were right at courtside. Because we didn't have suites in the traditional sense, but that's a very wealthy county, Oakland County, right near the Palace of Auburn Hills. And everybody kept asking us, do you have suites? Do you have suites? And we said, well, yeah, of course we do. They're floor suites. Right. And you could sit right on the floor at courtside, get a meal when you come in. We got parking for you right out back. And I had a great time with my friends at Oakland University in building that program in its first years of Division I.
What year was that?
That was 97 through 2001.
Okay. And learning the importance of euphemisms in marketing.
Absolutely. But we also did some great things for the university when we walked the folks from Pepsi around that arena while it was a construction site. We were all wearing hard hats, And I said, now that's where the scoreboard's going to be, and that's where the courtside tables are going to be. That's where the concessions are going to be. I said, do you guys want in? And they said, not only do we want in here, can you get us into the dining halls? And that became, with the help of a very supportive president, $2.4 million over 10 years for pouring rights on campus at Oakland University. So that remains today the biggest deal I've ever done. But it was so great to see athletics take the lead in a campus-wide deal. And when you have a supportive president, it makes it so much easier. And we got that deal done. And that deal has turned over a couple of times since I left there in 01. So that was a lot of fun. So now I'm really getting the hang of this whole thing, Tom.
Yeah.
And I'm living outside of Detroit, but I really want to get to an urban setting. So I got an offer, a position with Action Sports Media, a Paul Allen-owned company.
Right.
And they based me in Chicago. And I had access to sell signage at Purdue, Ross-Ade Stadium, Iowa, Kinnick Stadium, Rupp Arena, Tennessee, Alabama. We had all this inventory that Paul Allen's company had amassed over the years because they installed these jumbotrons on these campuses. So they said, Barry, you can sell this stuff, right? I said, are you kidding? I've sold NYU in Greenwich Village, Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan. You want to give me Purdue?
Floor suites.
You want to give me Purdue football, Iowa football, Kentucky basketball? When do I start?
Yeah.
And I had a great experience with those guys. And I'll tell you another funny story. I had always wanted to go to a game at Rupp Arena. So I did a deal to make sure that I had at least one sponsor on the courtside table panels so that I could take them to the game against Tennessee Tech so I could get to see a game at Rupp Arena.
Right.
So I kind of manipulated that deal a little bit to make sure that I was going to reap a little bit of benefit.
You wouldn't
be
the first in the sports business.
No. But that was a lot of fun. And then we started, my wife and I really wanted to start heading back this way. And then I actually worked for a good friend of ours, Ed Mineta. And he was starting up a sports marketing company, and we created the Inside the Big East television show, where I did all the clearances, sold the title sponsorship to Nivea for Men, and got that project off the ground. And then Columbia happened, and I was thrilled to be able to work. Diane Murphy selected me to take over the marketing of this program, which really had never been done. It was really another startup situation.
And what year was that, Ben?
That was in 05.
Okay.
And we started it from the ground up. Columbia had never done any sort of marketing. Previous administrations before Diane really didn't think that Columbia had much value in the marketplace, not only from a spectator standpoint, but from a business standpoint. And Diane was able to convince the trustees that we are leaving money on the table and we need to bring somebody in who can sell sponsorships. Mm-hmm. And they said, people would really want to sponsor Columbia Athletics? We don't have such a great history. But she said, yes, we will, because of the value of our audience, not necessarily the size of it. You guys were just talking about ratings and how to measure. Well, when I interviewed for the job, I said, we're going to sell sponsorships on the quality of our audience, not necessarily the quantity.
Right.
I said, there is more value in this building when there are 5,000 people at a Columbia event, more so than if there are 55,000 at a Kansas State football game, unless you're trying to sell Dodge trucks. Right. That was one of my sponsors at Kansas State. And they all agreed that it was the quality of the audience that was going to enable us to sell sponsorships for Columbia.
So when you look at the Ivy League when you get here, was it unusual at that point for even an Ivy League school to do something like that? And as you've kind of progressed, how many Ivy League schools have someone doing the Barry Neuberger job now that didn't have it then?
Well, now everybody's kind of caught up to this because of the need for revenue generation. But there was a huge sensitivity on protecting the brands of these eight elite institutions. Even here, Diane and I spent the whole first year I was here just crafting the policy on who we were going to approach, how we were going to display signs, and we made sure that this committee that I have across campus now is okay with what we're doing with sponsors, because the brand has to be protected. So even now, we never use the word partner when it comes to sponsorships. They are corporate sponsors for Columbia Athletics. They are not corporate partners of Columbia University.
Interesting. So who's on, you touched on this committee. How is a committee like that assembled? And then what is kind of their governance, which is, I would imagine that's pretty unusual in college athletics. You know, when you have, you know, an IMG or a Learfield out there selling, they're kind of doing it, talking to one person, not a board, to say, okay, we can't have Chico's bail bonds. You know, it's the official bail bonds of Columbia University. Not that you need that, but how does that work?
So we needed to collaborate with people across, our colleagues across campus. And by the way, we never use the word official. Mm-hmm. We use preferred.
Okay.
So
wow, the wordsmithing in this game is fascinating.
We had to be very sensitive about that. These were the policy guidelines. So we had legal counsel represented. We had somebody from the Alumni Association represented, because if we were going to do a sponsorship with a major company and we had an alumnus who was on the board of a competitor, we had to make sure mm-hmm. that was going to be okay.
Right. Wow.
We had purchasing involved, because we didn't want people to think that just because they would become a sponsor of athletics, that would curry favor on the business side with purchasing. We also had our foundation people involved, and we had other folks in supportive roles to make sure that when we were doing these significant sponsorships, and really they didn't bother us much when V&T Pizzeria or the Heights came on board as sponsors, but recently we got into a deal with Nissan, and we're now in year two with this, and Nissan wanted to produce premium giveaway items to give away at our football games. And the items were going to have the Nissan logo next to the Columbia Lion logo. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
And they got back to our folks, got back to us and said, either our logo is going to be bigger than theirs, or else it's going to be on the other side of the logo. So these are the challenges that we deal with. It's a tricky navigation.
To times working in the leagues, having conversations about this, the size of logos versus partners or sponsors' logos.
Yeah, always a big debate. It's a very, very tricky one. So thankfully, that committee over the years really stopped us one time from creating a sponsorship with an alum's company.
Wow.
He was bringing to us a trading company, and he wanted to create a fictitious trading contest where students would sign up, get an allocation, and then go through the trading process.
It's like the stock market game.
With a prize at the end for the student who accumulated the most fake dollars. And they said, it's too much like gambling, and we don't know where it's going to lead these kids. Many of them were probably doing it already.
Right.
But they said, can't take that sponsorship, so we had to turn it down.
It had to help that during your, it's now 11 years here?
This is year 12, yes.
Year 12. So in the 11, 12 years, that this happened to coincide with a dramatically rising tide in college sports marketing. The growth of IMG, Learfield, et cetera, multi-million dollar contracts. I mean, many of us know lead stories. So it had to help you sell into that governing board when you're suggesting these deals, because everybody's looking around the industry saying, well, it's happening elsewhere, we can imitate what's happening in terms of best practices.
For sure it helped. I don't know if anybody goes through the hurdles that we do on significant sponsorships, but that's okay.
Right.
And that's a main reason why Diane didn't want to outsource it.
But Barry, whether it's Notre Dame or Kentucky or Harvard or Columbia or Georgetown, the same considerations would come into play, conflicts of interest, bad taste, you know, all the things you're referring to.
You're exactly right, Tom. Yeah. But we value.
But this
our
is the
brand.
First time for you guys. Yeah,
yes, right. We value our brand. Right. So Columbia, and it, I am protecting the brand
right.
at the same time that I'm generating this revenue for the athletics department.
Right. So how many when this happened here? How many other Ivy League schools at that time were trying to do something similar?
I think the only guy who was in the league when I started, and is still there, was Jeff Hall at Cornell.
Wow.
And that's where Diane had been an associate AD. So she saw mm-hmm. that there was value in an Ivy League sports property. Cornell hockey is a tremendous revenue generator.
Yep.
And that is the anchor for a lot of their corporate sponsorships. Basketball had a little bit of a run a few years ago where it drove some interest, but really the hockey mm-hmm. is the anchor for their sponsorships.
So when you took your story to the marketplace, this quality over quantity pitch, how did it go? Did it take some time for that to build up?
We had to take a non-traditional approach to this. We couldn't walk down to the agencies and say, hey, look at our numbers. Look right. at our mm-hmm. webcasts. Look right. at our attendance. We couldn't do that. We needed out-of-the-box thinkers
right.
to come to us or to respond to us and say, you're right. We'd like to be at Columbia. That's how we got involved with Lagardère and the sports side of things. They had Chile, the tourism board of Chile, as one of their clients. And they said to those folks, how would you like to have a presence at Columbia, given the diversity of the student body, the wealth of the alumni? And when you come onto a stadium concourse, you're going to get to engage these people with on-site marketing. That's why we were able to get Chile for 2 years to be our homecoming game sponsor. So we don't have...
And they were on your target list?
Well...
Because it seems kind of random, that particular example.
When you and I talk about how do we find people, right. Well, we mine sponsor prospects
right.
in publications
right.
and...
Okay. The old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way, yeah.
You go through a list of Central American countries and figure out where you're going to end up. So.
And but we can't
but
do
Chile
this.
Is kind of random.
We can't do this
Think
traditionally.
Of all the
it's
got
to be, you know, weaving our way through the forest out there. So Chile was an example of that. And then you have to use relationships, people that all of us at the table are comfortable with, who can bring sponsors to us, who also understand the value of Columbia, and package us with other assets that they have. So we're not a standalone in their sponsorship package. We are another asset in their sponsorship package, similar to what we've just done with Ray Katz and Mike Schreck with Vitamin One Water.
Right, we'll talk about that in a second. I just have one quick question. Thinking of your the timeline from 2005 when mm-hmm. you started, so it also coincided with an increased scrutiny on sponsorship commitments on the brand side and the desire for fairly serious ROI analysis. So how are you wrestling with that? Because it's one thing to tell the story in the front end and get them in, but how do you retain them based on the ROI considerations?
Again, it's a non-traditional approach. So I can't show a sponsor what their investment is going to bring in terms of ROI. We try to over-deliver on assets and experiences. Bringing a sponsor out to mid-court in front of a sold-out gym and presenting them with a bag of goodies from the Lions store. We have to do this in a non-traditional way because I can't give them back ROI. Many of our sponsors are already doing business with the Columbia audience. This is a way for them to lift their brand,
extend it, yeah.
separate it a little bit. So our friends at Morton Williams, they're getting a lot of business from Columbia. So it's nice that they give back to us and we create affordable and reasonable sponsorship packages for people like that. There are other businesses in the community who've said to us, hey, I'm already doing 99% capacity of my business here down the street from Columbia. I don't really need to invest in marketing with you.
Yeah.
You know, my first thought is always, who's making up the 99%?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we got to keep relationships good in the community. Sure. So if they don't want to sponsor, that's fine. We'll get the next guy down the street.
So you mentioned a little bit about assets and assets that you can sell. one of the things that's really played out, and Robin Harris has really taken the lead on a lot of the digital technology, is the Ivy Network. Can you talk a little bit about the assets that you sell and how that really works, and why does it work for a school like Columbia to be producing games that people can just view online with, at a time when, by the way, not a lot of schools were doing that when it was first launched a few years ago, correct?
Actually, I launched, when I was at Oakland, the first internet-only broadcast of our games. Nobody else was doing
it. It was before the internet.
I was going to say. Right. You didn't have any viewers, but it sounded good in the sponsor.
And the buffering was incredible.
Wait, what year was that?
In 98.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Dial-up. Here, yeah. Barry's sitting there.
Mark Cuban was doing his streaming deals at broadcast.com.
Robin has been a pioneer on this, but again, selling the quality of the audience. Mm-hmm. When I can tell people that there are 750 Columbia alumni watching a college basketball game, what's the value of that to a prospective sponsor versus 1,200 people in a gym that I don't really know, but we can track who's buying the viewership on the webcast. So we do have good analytics there. But again, going back to the non-traditional approach, our numbers are not great, but it's the quality of the audience that we're selling. That's what the out-of-the-box thinkers have to look at. Again, the agencies, I don't think we've ever done a deal with the McCann Erickson's of the world and some of the other big ones. But yet the IMG folks, when they're putting together a big school deal, like to have us as their anchor in New York because we bring that kind of a presence to this market.
So we've seen a pretty big increase in brand sponsor activation in social media over the last year especially, and it's growing quite fast right now. Are there any examples? Have you gotten there yet?
We have to be sensitive about this because our alums and our followers will be sensitive if we over-commercialize social
those
media.
Feeds, yeah.
So we are trying to balance the value of it with the visibility of it for our sponsors. So we're kind of protecting the brand and taking baby steps in those directions. Now, the bigger schools who get hundreds of thousands of followers and, you know, those folks don't care what sponsor is on there as long as it's there. We have to be a little bit more sensitive to that. So when sponsors ask us, could you create this for me on social media, that's not my decision. We talk about that as a group in here to make sure that we're not over-commercializing the brand, which is a promise we made. Remember that committee I talked about?
Mm-hmm.
We made a promise to them that we weren't going to have signage in every corner of the gym and every inch of the football field, because we wanted to be respectful of the brand and to the people who buy tickets and come to our games, which is a heavy alumni-based audience. We wanted to make sure that, you know, the eyesight, the eye lines were not cluttered with signs, that we were going to be respectful to them viewing the game from a spectator viewpoint.
By the way, quickly, who manages your social media?
We have two people in the office here that do that. One is Greg Hotchkiss, who was, you might know, who's been at Pitt and Texas Tech and has a really good history on this. Mm-hmm. And Kathleen Clark, of course,
who's
our director of marketing. You probably had her as a student.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She handles a lot of our student-based social media. So when that kind of question comes up, I'll run it by Greg. And then Kathleen will be kind of the implementer of
it. To think about a way
but
to
Greg
do
and I will discuss and say, well, how much is this worth to the sponsor? How much are we getting? Is it worth the pushback we might get if we do this? So it's not just an automatic yes when somebody says, hey, I want to be on your Twitter feed. I want to be on your Facebook page. I want to sponsor this. I want to sponsor that. We are sensitive, again, in protecting the brand. So we make sure that's carefully evaluated before we do it.
Before we start moving into the final couple of questions, just talk for a minute, go back to this mention of the newest deal with our friends Ray Katz and Mike Schreck, Collegiate Sports Management Group.
And by the way, also you should probably fold in some of the more unique sponsorships that you've done around Columbia that people may not know about as well.
certainly the Chile one, you know, people said, well, you know, what are they doing here? That was an unusual one, but one that we think brought value to them because they did renew for a second year. So we'd like to think that, you know, that's the kind of unusual sponsorship. We also had, through the folks at Lagardère, Egypt was doing their tourism. Yeah.
Very mainstream, once again. So.
We actually had Egypt was going to sponsor one of our football games at the end of last year until that horrific crash happened in the desert. Mm-hmm. And we mutually decided to not pursue that sponsorship. No matter what the money was, again, the sensitivities on our campus, it just wasn't worth it for us to pursue it. And we were sensitive to their brand as well. So we didn't do that.
So now, we have like five more continents to conquer.
I was actually going to say, I don't think Barry wanted to tell everybody that Antarctica is going to be the official sponsor of the wrestling team next year, but we didn't want to get into that. So.
Well, wait a minute. That deal hasn't been signed yet. It depends on the value. But for instance, our partners at Columbia Presbyterian, New York Presbyterian Hospital, they've been a great sponsor of ours for years. And now with the affiliation of Cornell Weill Cornell facility on the east side, New York Presbyterian, they are now the sponsor of the Columbia Cornell basketball games and the football game.
Wow.
For the first time. Games. That's an interesting
approach. For the first time. Yeah. And we think this is the dipping the toes in the water for what could end up to be similar to the Bedlam series between Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, mm-hmm. where they would sponsor the entire, because we play Cornell in
every
sport. We don't have ice hockey, but virtually every sport we play them in. And now we think this is going to be the first step in them sponsoring the entire series of Cornell Columbia sporting events, which would be the first of its kind in our league.
Wow. There is no official sponsor of Penn Princeton.
No.
Wow.
And that's a natural thing that nobody has.
Harvard Yale could be a big one.
No, Harvard Yale once, you know, the game,
right.
Which I think is a natural, and I think would have, if you ever walk through the parking lot of that game, would have pretty good value to the Bentleys and whatever Furrier is near in between the two schools or Rolex. But we're taking some unusual steps with that in trying to brand possibly a whole series of events between two schools. That'd be the first time that's ever done. And the folks at the hospital are into it because they've got Cornell employees on the east side and Columbia employees up here, and they are now co-branding the two facilities. It's a natural for them to do that. So we're looking at that as a very progressive way of doing things. The Vitamin One water deal. Ray Katz and Mike Schreck were terrific on this. Mike Taylor, who owns this brand, is Boston-based, wanted to have a platform in the New York market to promote his product. He's got some things going up in Boston with MIT. He's looking at us, and we're also bringing our friends at Morton Williams to the table for him to get his product into the market.
And for those who don't know, Morton Williams is a supermarket on Broadway, right across from the Columbia campus.
Couldn't be any closer.
Not to be confused with Sherwin-Williams.
Exactly.
Couldn't be any closer to our campus. So Morton Williams has been a loyal sponsor of ours since we started this sponsorship program. And we cleared it with them. We asked them if they would be open to a meeting with Mike Taylor to get, if we're going to promote the product on campus, there's got to be on the back end a place for the kids to go buy it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that meeting will take place.
What about the concessions on campus?
Well, hopefully we can get him that same meeting with our friends at Housing and Dining.
Right.
They've got, and again, back to the political nature of this, and they are also part of our committee, by the way. So they may have some contractual agreements that may not let Mike get in right away with his product, but we certainly would like to have that meeting take place. And we don't need to be at the table.
Right.
That has to be a good business deal for both parties.
Right.
But those are the kinds of assets we can bring
to
a sponsor to get them on campus and help them develop their business here while they're a sponsor of Columbia Athletics.
Before we get to some of the personal questions that we want to wrap everything up with, Columbia men's basketball had quite a run last year. Football is hopefully improving. Women's basketball has some changes and is going to get better. Some of the other sports have done tremendously well. athletes have gone to the Olympics. How does the win-loss affect you at all versus other places that you've been?
I think it does affect us.
Wow.
Because when we were in the CIT last year, and those games were on the CBS Sports Network, people saw a full house of Colombians.
A raucous full house, I would add.
Great atmosphere, yeah. Right. Great atmosphere. And they saw courtside signage, and I'm sure it planted the seed for somebody to say, hey, we might need to be at Columbia now.
We'd love to have floor suites.
So that helps us a lot. Now, football would be huge for us. If Coach Bagnoli can get this going, and we all believe he will, then I'm not saying a full stadium every Saturday, but more attention drawn to Columbia football. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the sponsors want. You guys are in the business. You know what that's like. So instead of it being 4,000 to 6,000 for a non-homecoming game, maybe it's 8,000 to 10,000, and the stadium looks great, and there's a larger audience for people to do on-site marketing, couponing, data collection, because we know our audience is good, and we know they'll come out if we just move the bar a little bit in football. They've been waiting a long time for this.
Right.
So we think that if we can get football going, that's going to really help us bookend with men's basketball and have a really nice year-long sponsorship platform as opposed to just the winter right now. Basketball is going to be pretty good, and we've got the Ivy League tournament to shoot for the first time with the top four teams, which makes the back end of the schedule much more relevant than it ever has, because now you're playing in late February for a chance to get into that top four.
So would the seeding be done just on the Ivy results?
Yes. One versus four and two versus three at the Palestra.
But based on your overall record?
Just on the league record. Just on the league record. Okay. So those games, which used to be marketing challenges, you know, if you get out of the gate 1-4 in a 14-game schedule and only the top team is going to the NCAA tournament, those late February games were real challenges.
Yeah.
I mean, except for promoting the fact that your seniors are playing their last few games, now those games will have meaning.
Right.
So it just adds so much excitement to the back end of the schedule. So if we can get football going, we'll have the fall into the winter with sponsorship platforms for both football and basketball, and really help us create more revenue.
So Barry, as we like to wrap it up, and thanks again for taking the time today, we have a couple questions. The first is, where do you get your information from? Who do you follow? The second one is really kind of your advice to students or student athletes who come in on how to get involved. And the third thing, which we've started to ask, is who inspired you? And who do you look up to still to this day as a mentor or someone who really helped you get going in the industry?
Wow, gosh, what a flurry of questions.
Yeah, that's
So well, let's go back to the first one. Okay. How do we find out about that?
How do you stay smart?
I do is listen to guys like you
who
are so in tune to the industry, and our colleagues on the faculty. You know, Ray has been extremely helpful, but it's like I said, it's a very non-traditional path. So I'm reading the Sports Business Journal. I'm looking at an email that I get every day that covers Washington Heights and Inwood to see what restaurants are opening up there who we may want to engage to get our crowd from football over to their place. And then it's, you know, I'm looking in the Times. I'm watching Facebook and Twitter and seeing what companies are making a move into sports, to see if we might be a part of their entree into this field. But again, it's a non-traditional thing. You know, if I go to these conventions and I'm sitting next to the guy from Tennessee or Alabama or Kansas, and he's got a little thicker portfolio than I would about what his assets are, that's going to be a tough one for me. But we try to navigate the waters. We also listen to our alums who may have a friend in a business or a company that may want to get involved with sponsorship. We have to be sensitive with that, because we don't want to go to a company where we have a prominent alum who's donating money
right.
to support athletics. We don't want anybody to reach up back to him and say, hey, why are the people from Columbia calling us for a $10,000 sponsorship? Didn't you just give? And it may be somebody that's given a substantial gift. So we have to be very sensitive about that. Now, if an alum brings us a contact, that's a lot easier for me to navigate than just cold calling mm-hmm. a company where we have alumni.
Advice you give.
The advice I would give to students who want to get into the sports business is be a revenue generator. Don't be a cost center because you're always vulnerable. But if you can bring in money,
yep.
you are always going to have a place in this business. And I know I have lots of friends who do compliance, and that's a very important area in collegiate athletics. But it's a cost center. But I know we need that. But if you can show somebody that you can generate revenue, there's always going to be a place for you at any level of the industry.
Joe, that may be the most direct and unequivocal answer we've gotten. Yep. Be a revenue generator. It's good. That's a really good piece of advice.
If you can turn over dollars, then you're going to show us whether it's tickets, merchandise, sponsorship.
Well, that's something I think we've all pointed out to the students that we work with, is that if you think of the business as buy-sell, the sell side of the sports business is enormous. Mm-hmm. It's virtually in all areas of the sports business, and it's often not really recognized that way by young people who don't realize how much revenue generating is going on across the board.
We keep using the word. It comes up all the time. This has become a business. Over the last 20 years, we've watched it. Mm-hmm. Even in the Ivy League, even with the things that Ray and Mike are doing with Division II and III conferences, mm-hmm. they're probably bringing things to mm-hmm. those athletics directors who are saying, you mean we can make
right.
money on this?
Yep.
I just think if you can show that you can sell tickets, sell sponsorships, generate
media.
Revenue,
right.
sell media, sell merchandise.
Oh, there's our cue. Yeah.
that's the 2-minute warning in our podcast.
All the things that can help the bottom line, you will always receive consideration for
yeah.
employment, and it'll help you move along.
And speaking of employment, who inspired you? Who do you kind of follow? Who do you look up to?
Wow. I mean, I'm kind of a self-starter in this. You know, my dad had his own little business, had nothing to do with sports, so I didn't have any family ties. But I think when I got to NYU, that was my first level of people who were really in the business of sports. And Cal Ramsey
wow.
was very helpful to me. You know, he was working in alumni relations. He was our assistant basketball coach. And he kind of guided me through that first deal with Coca-Cola. You know, he, as Cal, you know, was involved with many companies back then. But he said, Barry, give them something that you find valuable and then agree on the price and then you got your deal. So he really was a very effective mentor for me. We've stayed close for a long, going back to those days in the 80s. And Cal was very helpful. He had a very keen sense of business. And what I loved about Cal was he had about 5 part-time jobs
yep.
at the time. So he was never accountable to anybody. Mm-hmm. So whenever somebody needed him, they would leave a message for him and he would find a way to get back to them. But he was never in one place.
Yep. We can relate to that. Yeah, exactly.
Does
yeah.
that sound familiar?
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Cal Ramsey, legendary NYU player with Satch Sanders in the same
yes.
era, and is a personality around New York. Still, I sat next to Cal for 7 years when I was with the Knicks. He did color for the Knicks for a while. He's a tremendous community ambassador. He's gotten on in 8 years right now, but his mind, I'm sure, is still as sharp now as it's ever been before.
Cal was a great guy then, still is, offers his counsel to me whenever I see him, whenever I need anything. But yeah, he knew the business of sports back when very few people did, and was very helpful in forming my initial exposure into the business with that Coca-Cola NYU Holiday Tournament. Mm-hmm. And his words I still go by, you know, create a value, show it to someone, agree on the price, you got your deal.
Great. So last, Barry, where do people find you if they want to contact you either in social media or LinkedIn? And then how do they find out more about the opportunities at Columbia Athletics?
I'm on Facebook. I actually have a Twitter feed. I tweeted last night or two nights ago. I don't like to tweet a lot, but I tweeted. I was so happy to see a March Madness promo on the TBS game the other night.
Wow, that's early.
And I tweeted, great to see March Madness as part of the baseball game. March 14th. I got it circled on my calendar, and I got a bunch of likes.
Spring is
on
in
that.
The air. No winter this year.
I'm here at Columbia. You can find my email address on our website, gocolumbialions.com. We welcome inquiries about sponsorships, but I talk to a lot of young people in the industry who are looking for just a little bit of guidance, whether they're a friend of the family, a student in our program. Because I think we have to provide that. And yep. I think we have to use our knowledge, our experience as a resource for them. Because if we keep it inside, then it's wasted. Right. So I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, and I'm on the Columbia website at bin2102@columbia.edu. I never, ever forget to return a call, and I always answer emails, even if you're a stranger to me. Because you never know who's on the other end.
You never know.
You never know. Yeah. So I always make sure, that's a pet peeve of mine, to call people back or send them an email, but to respond. I will always do that.
I also want to urge listeners, Joe, to actually check out some of these local Columbia games, because we had the privilege of going to many of the basketball games last year, and they were genuinely exciting.
Especially
the end of the season, but for those of us that might be a little bit jaded around some of the pro sports, the authenticity of college sports, especially ones where there are no scholarships, these are genuine student athletes.
We have special
kids. It's a
really
nice thing to see.
Yeah. We have special kids who participate in
the collegiate athletics. And
there's
a subway right away for a lot of people in this area here in New York.
You know, these kids are not on scholarship, as you mentioned. They come to Columbia because it's a great school. And then they choose to play the sport that they love. And I think there's great value to that for fans and spectators. Plus, our venue for basketball is terrific. Yeah. Every seat is a good seat. It gets loud. The Ivy League games are so entertaining. It's relatively inexpensive. It's good family entertainment. So
your halftime gimmicks are pretty fun, too. I've seen a few of those.
We do like to make it 2 hours of entertainment, not just a basketball game. And that's how we built it from the beginning, is that in the most competitive sports marketplace in America, we have to provide good value for people who want to give us their time and their money. So we've never let that escape from our primary goal of making it good entertainment.
Great. Barry Neuberger, Associate Athletics Director for Corporate Sponsorships at Columbia University. Once again, thank you for joining us on The Cusp Show.
I enjoyed it.
Thanks,
thank you,
Barry. It's a pleasure to know you, have you as a colleague, and really appreciate the time and the great stories you shared.
Thank you for the kind words.
And Tom, once again, thanks for coming along for another ride.
Thank you, Joe, especially after the red eye last night. You did a good job. So
a lot of fun, and we'll catch up with everybody down the line.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, and my co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student Maurice Eisenman. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and other key platforms. You can also find it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CU_SPS_sports. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.